Gopi jana baulava gire vare dhari. Yesoda nandana vrajala janaranjana. Yesoda nandana vrajala janaranjana. Yamuna tira vanachari. Yamuna tira vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi jana vallava gire vare dhari. Gopi jana vallava gire vare dhari. Yesoda nandana braja janaranjana. Yesoda nandana braja janaranjana. Yamuna tira vanachari. Yamuna tira vanachari. Jayu Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi jana jana vadava gire vare dhari. Yesoda nandana braja janaranjana. Yesoda nandana braja janaranjana. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Paramahansa Paravijakacharya Sarasvati. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, Verse 31. Vikarshata Antahridayat Dasipatim Ajamilam Yamapresyan Vishnuduta Varayamasu Ojasa Vikarshatantarhidayad Dasipatim Ajamilam Yama Preshyan Vishnuduta Varayam Asurojasa Vikarshatantarhidayad Dasipatim Ajamilam Yama Preshyan Vishnuduta Varayam Asurojasa Vikarshatantar Hidayad Dasipatim Ajamilam Yama Preshyan Vishnuduta Varayam Asurojasa Vikarshata Snatching. Antahridayat. From within the heart. Dasipatim. The husband of the prostitute. Ajamilam. Ajamila. Yamapresyan. The messengers of Yamaraj. Vishnuduta. The order carriers of Lord Vishnu. Varayamasu forbade. Ojasa with resounding voices. Translation. The order carriers of Yamaraj were. I'll say it myself first, then you can repeat. The order carriers of Yamaraj were snatching the soul from the core of the heart of Ajamil, the husband of the prostitute. But with resounding voices, the messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, forbade them to do so. Again. The order carriers of Yamaraj were snatching the soul from the core of the heart of Ajamil. The husband of the prostitute. But with resounding voices, the messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, forbade them to do so. Purport. A Vaishnava, one who is surrendered to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, is always protected by Lord Vishnu's order carriers. Because Ajamil had chanted the holy name of Narayana, the Vishnu Dutas not only immediately arrived on the spot, but also at once ordered the Yamadutas not to touch him. By speaking with resounding voices, the Vishnu Dutas threatened to punish the Yamadutas if they continued trying to snatch Ajamil's soul from his heart. The order carriers of Yamaraj have jurisdiction over all sinful living entities, but the messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, are capable of punishing anyone, including Yamaraj, if he wrongs a Vaishnava. Materialistic scientists do not know where to find the soul within the body with their material instruments, but this verse clearly explains that the soul is within the core of the heart, Shidaya. It is from the heart that the Yamadutas were extracting the soul of Ajamil. Similarly, we learn that the super soul, Lord Vishnu, is also situated within the heart. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hideshya Juna Jishtati. In the Upanishads, it is said that the super soul and the individual soul are living in the same tree of the body as two friendly birds. Super soul is said to be friendly because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind to the original soul that when the original soul transmigrates from one body to another, the Lord goes with him. Furthermore, according to the desire and karma of the individual soul, the Lord, through the agency of Maya, creates another body for him. The heart of the body is a mechanical arrangement, as the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 1861, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridayesha arjuna tishtati pramayan sarva bhutani yantra rudhani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. Yantra means a machine, such as an automobile. The driver of the machine of the body is the individual soul, who is also its director or proprietor. But the supreme proprietor is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One's body is created through the agency of Maya, Kamana Daiva Netrena, and according to one's activities in this life, another vehicle is created again under the supervision of Daivi Maya, Daivi Hiyeshu Guna Mayi Mama Maya Duratyaya. At the appropriate time, one's next body is immediately chosen, and both the individual soul and the super soul transfer to that particular bodily machine. This is the process of transmigration. During transmigration from one body to the next, the soul is taken away by the order carriers of Yamaraj and put into a particular type of hellish life, Naraka, in order to become accustomed to the condition in which he will live in his next body. Om Agyanati Marandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unminitam Dena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangun Mangayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurandina Tarana Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vidanta Swaman Iti Namane Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shanyavari Pastachya De Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So yesterday's verse, I'll read that again. My dear king, the order carriers of Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, immediately arrived when they heard the holy name of their master from the mouth of the dying Ajamil, who had certainly chanted without offense because he had chanted in complete anxiety. And then today, the order carriers of Yamaraj was snatching the soul from the core of the heart of Ajamil, the husband of the prostitute, but with resounding voices, the messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, forbade them to do so. Yesterday, we already explained the reason why Ajamil was qualified to receive the darshan of the Vishnu Dutas. Ordinarily, as we
mentioned and spoke elaborately on yesterday. Ordinarily, the Vishnu Dutas will not participate in this transmigration process unless one is qualified. He's been recognized by the Supreme Lord, and therefore the Vishnu Dutas will take the qualified candidate towards a higher destination, whereby he won't have to be sidetracked into what Prabhupada explains here, a destination which has been determined by Yamaraj, which is a preparation for his next body. Prabhupada made that point very clear. I was smiling that Prabhupada made that very point very clear at the end of the purport, that according to one's sinful activities, then if one has not been released from those sinful reactions by chanting the names, even once, as we spoke about yesterday, then one's next life is then determined according to the desires that one has at the time of death. And then, in order to prepare for that next life, especially if one has to go into a lower form of life, which is a destination of a human being who's led a completely sinful life, then it's not that he's going to make progress, but he may have to be cast down into lower forms of life. Therefore, the hellish punishment he receives is he gets a punishment which helps him to acclimate or accustom him to his next body so that he may adjust, make a transition to his next body. And the point that Prabhupada makes here in the purport is that Yamaraj, he makes that decision. And elsewhere, actually, in I was looking for it just before, I remember there being a verse in this chapter which compares Yamaraj to be just like the super soul, because he's omniscient. And where is it? Ah, yes. The omnipotent Yamaraj is as good as Lord Brahma, for while situated in his own abode or in everyone's heart like the Paramatma, he mentally observes the past activities of a living entity and thus understands how the living entity will act in future lives. Purport: one should not consider Yamaraj an ordinary living being. He is as good as Lord Brahma. He has the complete cooperation of the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart, and therefore, by the grace of the Supersoul, he can see the past, present, and future of a living being from within. The word anumimamsate means that he can decide in consultation with Supersoul. Anu means following. The actual decisions concerning the next lives of the living entities are made by the Supersoul, and they are carried out by Yamaraj. So, because Yamaraj, his position is being very powerful, he is described here as omniscient. He understands the dharmic or adharmic activities which were committed by the living entity previous to his giving up his body, and then in consultation with Supersoul. Now, who is Supersoul? Well, Supersoul is what the personality Srila Prabhupada speaks about here in today's purport. Supersoul, as we know, serves two functions in the heart of every living being. He is the witness, and he gives sanction to the living entity according to the living entity's desires. And therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the living entity carries his different conceptions of life from one body to the next, just as the air carries aromas from one place to the next. So in the same way, whatever desires are still there within the heart, and as we spoke about yesterday elaborately, that real atonement means to Kechit Kevalya Bhakti Vasudeva Parayana, is not to eradicate sinful reactions, which is what many people think that atonement is that if I can eradicate the sinful reactions, I won't have to go to hell. Great. If I don't go to hell, then I've got a good destination in my next life. Because if it's not hell, then at least maybe it's heaven or some, there'll be a place where I won't have to suffer. So, therefore, he may not, the super soul witnesses the desires, but if there's still desires there within the heart, then one has to take another birth again. And if one has to take another birth again, for one who actually has a higher understanding of the eternality of the soul, has a higher understanding of the eternal abode of the Supreme Lord, has a higher understanding that the actual constitutional nature of the living being is to render service to the Supreme Lord, then taking another birth again is also as good as going to hell. Right? This is because, in fact, there's that verse, even we oftentimes quote Prabodhananda Saraswati, Kaivalya Narakaya Te Tridasapura Kasa Upaya. Tridasapura Akasa Pushpaya Te. He describes that for one who receives the merciful glance of Lord Chaitanya, then Kaivalya, even liberation, is as good as hell. It's as good as hell. Why? Because there's no service to Krishna. A devotee considers any situation which doesn't provide him service to Krishna to be as good as hell. So therefore, kaivalya narakayate jidasa purukasha pushvayate, that for one who receives the merciful glance of Lord Chaitanya, kaivalya is like hell, and then the abodes, the heavenly planets of the demigods, they're just like phantasmagoria, they're irrelevant to him. And then he also says, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, that the venomous serpents of the senses become like serpents with broken fangs. They no longer have any poisonous effect. What does that mean? Venomous serpents of the senses. The senses are like venomous serpents because they're ready to strike an object. As long as one still has desires, as long as those desires are still there in the heart to enjoy, when he sees an object to desire, and when it strikes the object, it's like a serpent. One thinks, immediately, let me enjoy. But for one who receives Lord Chaitanya's merciful glance, the venomous serpents of the senses become like serpents with broken fangs. There's no poisonous effect. In other words, although they see the sense object, even the desire to enjoy has been uprooted from within the heart. Why? Because they see everything connected to Krishna. This is how to actually eradicate the desires to enjoy, is by seeing everything connected to the Lord. When you see everything connected to the Lord, we oftentimes quote, actually, I always keep this hand nearby because I think of different quotes that I speak from time to time, and they're very, very, very nicely elaborate some of the points that I'm speaking about. And this one, if I can find it, I know I will. Just take me a second. I found it. This one is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And we're explaining the venomous serpents of the senses become like serpents with broken fangs. They don't have any poisonous effect. So he's speaking about, in this quote, he's saying, how should we see the world? Right? How should we see the world? For a person whose senses are still like venomous serpents, how does he see the world? He sees everything for my enjoyment. Right? So whenever he sees something, he immediately thinks, oh, I'd like to have that. I'd like to enjoy that. It'd be very nice to experience some pleasure from that object of the senses. The mind, as Krishna warns about the mind, if one is not careful, if he continues to contemplate the objects of the senses, attachment. It's there. Lust arises from a lust. He comes attachment. No, contemplation of the object is lust. Then anger, delusion, bewilderment of memory. When the memory is bewildered, the intelligence is lost. When intelligence is lost, one falls in the material whirlpool. So as long as one looks at the objects as sense enjoyment and continuously contemplates those objects in that way, then it will lead to degradation. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in his quote describes, how should one look at the world? Of course, it's nice to hear this. And sometimes when I quote this, people think, yeah, sure, how am I going to see things like that? But we spoke about that also a little bit yesterday. But how should we treat the material world? He says we should see this material world and everything in it as full of ingredients for the Lord's service. Okay? Everything in this world is meant for Krishna's service. The day when we can look at the world like this and become liberated from the material conception, we will be able to see the material world as the spiritual world, Goloka. We should treat all women as Krishna's beloveds. They are to be enjoyed by him. Do not look at them with an enjoying spirit. They are meant to be enjoyed by Krishna, never by the living entities. Treat your father and mother as Krishna's father and mother. Instead of considering your children your servants, treat them as friends of child Krishna. Then you will not see the material world everywhere but Goloka. So, it's paradigm shift. You know, we talk about paradigm shifts. When we were speaking about, I think we were speaking about paradigm shifts last night. So paradigm shifts, right? How to see things connected to Krishna. And of course, the more we see this world connected to Krishna, then the more we'll be in Krishna consciousness, and the more we're in Krishna consciousness, then Krishna takes care of the living entities because he's the super soul in the heart of all living beings, and he knows the desires of the living entities. He knows the living entity has cultivated a desire to become attached to him, to try to see him in everything, both by hearing about him, by chanting his glories, by looking at the form of the deity, and by purifying his senses so that gradually his senses can actually see this world for what it is. He knows the efforts the living entity is making to become Krishna conscious. And because that effort is there within of the living entity, by the living entity's own determination, Krishna, who is the super soul within the heart of the living being, who knows the desires of the living entity, he tells Yamaraj, oh, Sissi, this living entity is trying to become attached to me. And because he's making the effort. Tesham satatam yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam. Tesham avanukam pratam mahamagyana jamtama. Krishna says, those who make the effort to see me, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance from within their heart. Krishna is there within the heart as super soul. And Yamaraj is also there because Yamaraj knows what's going on in the heart because the super soul and the Yamaraj work together, and therefore Yamaraj is omniscient, as good as the super soul. And therefore, they work collaboratively. So one may say, well, then why did Ajamil have to deal with the Yamadutas? Why didn't? But the Yamadutas actually, they were acting, they thought on behalf of Yamaraj. But they had to go back to Yamaraj and get clarification. Why did the Vishnudutas stop us? They went back, and of course, that whole discourse between Yamaraj and the Vishnu Dutas, which took place later, Yamaraj made it perfectly clear that I'm a servant. You forgot one thing, that I'm a servant of somebody else. And if somebody else has a different decision than what you may think is my decision, I immediately surrender to his decision. That's why you were stopped by those Vishnu Dutas. So, therefore, as Prabodhananda Saraswati explains, that the venomous serpents of the senses become like serpents with broken fangs. They no longer have a poisonous effect. Why? Because although the senses see the objects, serpents with broken fangs can't strike the object. They can't do anything. There's no harm whatsoever. So in the same way, there's no harm from seeing the objects of the senses for one who's gotten Lord Chaitanya's merciful glance, because his vision is that he's trying to see everything connected to Krishna. That is automatic detachment. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Jana Yasuvaya Agyam Gyanam Chahatayada Ahaitukam. By rendering devotional service to the Supreme Lord Vasudeva, one automatically acquires knowledge and detachment. Therefore, we're speaking about the venomous serpents of the senses become like serpents with broken fangs. Then Prabodhananda goes on to describe that the positions of the demigods, they become like insignificant insects. Like, he doesn't even aspire take a position of a demigod to go to some higher planet or to take some responsible service as in the demigod. These positions of the demigods, they're irrelevant to him. So why there are all these, the heavenly planets, why is sense gratification, why is liberation, why are they all insignificant to a devotee? They're insignificant because the devotee is one who is always eager for the Lord's pleasure. Bhajaniya paramasukha matasusukadvam. To the degree that we are eager for Krishna's pleasure, to the degree that we're eager to satisfy Krishna, to that degree, we become satisfied. This is the key. Prabhupada quotes this in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's Jiva Goswami. Bhajaniya paramasukha. To the degree that Krishna is pleased by our efforts, we get satisfaction. Imagine having that kind of satisfaction. That kind of satisfaction which is so satisfying that the thought, so we hear the statements of great acharyas that, like Madhavendrapuri, that now that I've been engaged in remembering the Supreme Lord, then all my other duties that I'm performing, these duties become external. I think simply to remember Krishna is sufficient for me. I don't have to do any of these other duties. I don't feel obliged to them all. He gives, taking morning bath. Of course, when we say that sometimes, taking morning bath, we think, oh, wow, I don't have to take a morning bath. But he's specifically speaking about ritualistic activities. These ritualistic activities are insignificant. What is the purpose of such ritualistic activities? They're all meant, smartavyam satatam vishnor vismartavyam najatuchit savaviri nisedasyo etiyo eva kinkara. Krishna must be remembered and he must never be forgotten. All the ritualistic activities in the Vedas, all the sarva vidis, the vidis, the ritualistic activities of the Vedas, and the shedas, the prohibited activities which are mentioned in the Vedas, which we should avoid, they're meant to serve these two principles, simply to remember Krishna. So therefore, Madhavendra Puri says, for me, simply remembering Krishna is sufficient for me. Bilva Mangala Thakur says that simply to be engaged in your devotional service, that's sufficient for me. I'm satisfied because to be engaged in your devotional service, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, right? Religious activities, artha, economic development, kama, sense gratification, moksha, all these things, they're standing waiting at my doorstep with their hands folded waiting to serve me. Simply to be engaged in your service, I don't have to think of any of these other things. And therefore, we read about in the Nectar of Devotion that devotional service is an activity in of itself which is so satisfying that even the concept of liberation for a devotee is something he doesn't have to think about it. Because he places everything in Krishna's hands. If Krishna wants me to come, I'll come. If Krishna wants me to stay, I'll stay. Krishna wants me to go to the heavenly planets. He must have some service there for me. If he wants me to go to hell, he must have some service there for me. It's the service. Even in hell, devotees can see opportunities for service. And therefore, Narayana Paraksave na Kutashina Bibati. The devotee doesn't fear any condition of life. Whether he's in heaven, hell, whether he's liberated, for him, it's all the same. Because a devotee's satisfaction is seeing everything for Krishna's pleasure. That is his satisfaction. How to see everything for Krishna's pleasure? This, of course, is the kind of observation that Krishna, who is super soul within the heart, observes. And Prabhupada gives the example that just as the fragrance of a flower can be understood by one who's standing next to it, so in the same way, Krishna, who's closest to the soul within the heart as super soul, he understands what's there in the heart. He knows what desires are there, but he also knows what the living entity is endeavoring to do to overcome those desires. And he knows that that living entity is making the effort to overcome those desires not by karma, not by jnana, not by mystic yoga. If he knows that living entity is making the effort to overcome those desires by remembrance of him, then Krishna says, I'll help. I'll help. I'll kick in what you're lacking. Tesham nitya bhukti yuktanam yoga kshema vaham yaham. That whatever you lack, I'll give it to you. And whatever you've started by your efforts to remember me, I'll preserve for you. I'll give you an opportunity in your next life to either continue where you left off and in a suitable place where you can increase or become increasingly purified for whatever residual desires may still be there within the heart, if you haven't cleansed all the desires, automatically he'll release one from having to go for hellish life. That, as we already talked about yesterday, that can be achieved even by namabhas. Even by chanting the holy name of the Lord with a slight glimpse, one can be released from having to go to hellish life. But namabhas is compared to be like a passport. But even though you have a passport, you still have to get a visa. Right? You have a passport. You would say, I have an American passport. When you go over to some other country, you go, where's your visa? You want to go to Vaikuntha, you want to go to the spiritual, you have to have a visa. Passport's not good enough. So, yeah. Passport is a way of, you can leave America, you can go. All right? You can go. But if you want to go to Vaikuntha, if you want to go to the spiritual world, you have to have the visa. So in the same way, that although we may be relieved from reactions to sinful life, without a visa, where are we going to go? So therefore, the Lord who is situated within the heart, he knows, well, he's making the effort. He knows if there's no more desires, then he stamps. Okay, your visa's passed. You can go. But if there's still some desires, the Lord is situated within that, then what does he do? He makes an arrangement for that living entity. He preserves whatever efforts he's engaged in to remember the Lord. He preserves that. He may bring him back to Godhead. It's his decision, as we said yesterday. Final decision is always Krishna's. You can't always say, he has to do this. No, he doesn't have to do anything. Final decision is always up to him. And a devotee who always leaves Krishna's final decision up to him is safe. He doesn't try to calculate, how can I force Krishna's hand? He leaves the final decision up to Krishna. Let him take me. Let him put me in another place. Just let me remember you and let me serve you. That is all. Just let me remember you and let me serve you. Therefore, sometimes we even see when devotees of the Lord, they get in the presence of the Lord, they get the opportunity to receive benedictions of the Lord. Then sometimes the devotees, even though they have an opportunity to get a benediction of the Lord, they ask from the Lord, please let me be in the association of your devotees. Because if I'm in the association of devotees, of your devotees who always glorify you won't let me forget you. If I, by my own effort, it's pretty risky business. I know the dangers by my own effort. I know how much I struggle. But if you somehow, if you will give me the opportunity to be in the association of your devotees, then your devotees who are always glorifying you, how will it? And therefore, we oftentimes quote that prayer, Haridas Thakur. When Haridas Thakur, again with Lord Chaitanya, during Lord Chaitanya's Mahaprakash Lila, Lord Chaitanya was giving benedictions to all his devotees, and Haridas Thakur, in his total humility, he was praying to the Lord after the Lord gave him the benediction and revealed to Haridas Thakur why he didn't have to suffer when he was being beaten through 22 marketplaces. The Lord said, I came down and I lied on your back and I took those beatings myself, and therefore you did not have to suffer because you're very dear to me. And then the Lord asked, you know, Haridas Thakur, you know, to speak, and Haridas Thakur said to the Lord, he said, oh, my Lord, he said, please forgive me. I don't know what qualification I have right now to be able to see you in this beautiful form. He says, because I never remember you, and because I never remember you, I don't deserve to be able to see you now. Then he gave different examples. He gave the example when Draupadi was in great difficulty. And when she was in great difficulty, when Durvasa Muni came to the forest, and in that midst of that great difficulty, she remembered you. And because she remembered you, you appeared in that place. You took simply a small grain from the pot, and by taking that small grain of the pot, then Durvasa Muni was satisfied, and she and the Pandavas were completely protected. Why? Because she remembered you. He said, but I never remember you. I never remember you. I'm not qualified. I never remember you. And then he gave the example. He gave the example of Prahlad Maharaj. When Prahlad Maharaj was faced with great difficulty, his father was trying to kill him, throw him onto the cliff. Prahlad Maharaj, he simply always remembered you. And because he always remembered you, therefore you always gave him your protection. I don't remember you, Lord. He said, even Ajamil. He said, even Ajamil, he remembered you. He called out your name at the time of giving up his body. And because he remembered you, he called out that name. He was able to remember you, and you gave him protection. I never remember you. Why am I able to see you? I'm not qualified to see you. And then you're asking me to ask for some benediction. He said, but I'm not qualified to ask for any benediction, but I will ask for something. He says, as long as you're asking me for a benediction, I have to ask, please let me take birth as a dog in the house of your devotees. Because if I can take birth as a dog in the house of your devotees, I will be able to take their food remnants, and I'll always be able to hear their glories in the association of devotees. So Haridas Thakur, here he is. He has the darshan of the Lord. And he's praying to the Lord, give me the benediction. Even if I have to take birth as a dog, I don't care, as long as I'm in the association of your devotees. Because in the association of devotees, it will be impossible to forget you. Therefore, a devotee is satisfied simply to remember the Lord. So, in fact, even Haridas Thakur, he apologizes. He says, forgive me for being so arrogant, for asking for such a high benediction when I don't deserve it. This is how he was thinking. Total humility. So he wasn't thinking, I don't remember the Lord, but if I'm with your devotees, I'll hear your glories. And then it'll be impossible to forget as long as I can continuously hear your glories. So the devotee is his happiness, his satisfaction is remembering the Lord. And because the Lord, who is situated within the heart, knows that the devotee is making that effort to always remember him, then from within the heart, the Lord says, yes, let me put in a situation so that he can either be always in my association. If there's no other desires there other than the desire to always remember him, then he's qualified. Let me take him back. Take him back to just as he did with Dhruva Maharaj. When Dhruva Maharaj finished ruling the planet for 36,000 years, he had to stay for 36,000 years because he wanted to sit on his father's throne. So he got to sit on his father's throne for 36,000 years, but the Lord told him, okay, you can sit on your father's throne for 36,000 years, but you won't forget me. He says, you'll perform sacrifices for 36,000 years and you won't forget me. And then after that, then what happened? Then the Lord personally came, sent the Vishnu Dutas, flower airplane came for Dhruva Maharaj. After serving in remembrance of the Lord for 36,000 years as a ruler of the planet, and then the Vishnu Dutas came, and then Death Personified came. And Death Personified appeared, and what did Dhruva Maharaj say? Most people, when Death Personified comes, they think, I'm going to have to deal with this. But Dhruva, what did he do? He stepped on Death Personified's head and used him as a step to get into the flower airplane. Entered the flower airplane, Vishnu Dutas took him to where? His next destination? He was going to the pole star because he wanted a kingdom even better than his great-grandfather's, Lord Brahma's. So even better than Lord Brahma's kingdom was the pole star, because and this is one planet in the universe where there's no death. Brahma, he has to give up in the body, but there's no death. And the fact that the Lord resides in that planet, I think it's described by Jiva Goswami that he resides in that planet in the form of Ajita. That is his name. That is his form, who resides on the pole star. But he gets the association of the Lord. He doesn't have to take birth again. He lives eternally. And the Vishnu Dutas carried him to the spiritual world. And because of his, then of course he became concerned. What about my mother? She was my guru. And then of course the whole explanation is there, that as soon as Dhruva Maharaj was thinking about his mother, her instructions, who told him to go to the forest and to seek out the Lord and to get the fulfillment of his desires. And then he looked and he saw, that there was another flower airplane and his mother was on it. She was also going back to Vishnu Loka. So the Lord's there. He's a witness. He knows. So therefore, the beauty of bhakti, the beauty of bhakti is not in the perfection of the execution of the rituals. The beauty of bhakti is the intent. It's the cultivation of desire. And because the Lord knows how much the devotee is cultivating the desire to remember him, he knows he's cultivating that desire to depend upon him. He's cultivating the desire to see him in everything, because he knows that there's the Lord within the heart, because he witnesses. You can't hide anything from him. You can say all you want, but unfortunately, he knows what desires we're cultivating. And therefore, if he sees the effort to cultivate the desire to remember him by sincere chanting, by efforts to remember him, by hearing his glories, by efforts to remember him, by speaking about him instead of about speaking about mundane subject matters, efforts to remember him in so many different ways, by looking upon his his beautiful form, which he so kindly manifests in the form of Ajna-Vigraha, and efforts to remember him, those efforts in of themselves are sufficient. The Lord accepts that as devotion. He accepts, even though we can't fully remember him, he accepts the effort to remember him as devotion. And he'll never neglect a person who is always making that effort to see him in everything. That is the devotee. Therefore, in the case of here, of course, we were speaking, what is the verse we're speaking from today? 131. The order carriers of Yamaraj were snatching the soul from the core of the heart of Ajamil, the husband of the prostitute, but with resounding voices, the messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, forbade them to do so. And then Prabhupada explained, we already spoke about yesterday, why the Vishnu Dutas came. They represented Lord Vishnu. They understood that Ajamil had sufficiently purified himself by chanting Namabhas. And then, of course, as we also spoke about yesterday, because there was still not, although he was purified from having to go to the hellish planets, having to be punished by the Yamadutas, then he was given another chance. The second chance was he was given another chance to completely fix himself totally in remembrance of the Lord. Where he went to, Prabhasa Kshetra or Hardwar? So he went to Hardwar. He went to Hardwar, right? And upon going to Hardwar, he fully engaged himself, immersed himself in service to the Lord. And then after full immersion of the Lord, then those same personalities who previously came to obstruct the Yamadutas appeared again. This time, nobody else was there. And he achieved his destination without having to take another birth and without having to undergo the punishment by the Yamadutas. Such is... So that's, of course, that explains, that gives a little explanation of what happens at Namabhas, that if Namabhas, the one that avoids having to be punished, and if he avoids having to be punished, yes, he's got a passport now, but now if he wants to get the visa, if he wants to get the visa, he really has to go to that destination, to enter into the spiritual world. He has to be fixed in service and remembrance, which of course is one of the best methods of serving the Lord, is simply to remember him. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. The 9 processes of rendering service to the Lord, beginning with hearing, chanting, and remembering. And the more we serve, fixed in service, then we get our visa stamped for our next destination, and I'll have to come back again to this material world. So all the help is there from within the heart. If we are conscious of that, we try to be conscious not only that the Lord is there within my heart, but of a devotee who is conscious that the Lord is in everyone's heart, then being conscious of the presence of the Lord in everyone's heart, the devotee is compassionate and he preaches to others and helps them to follow the Lord's dictations and follow the Lord's superior instructions so that they don't have to suffer either. The devotee doesn't think simply how he can avoid suffering, but he can render service to the Lord in a more pleasing way by thinking how others can avoid suffering, by giving them the opportunity to render service to the Lord who is in everyone's heart, and to remember the Lord by helping them to remember the Lord by speaking about the Lord's glories. And therefore, Krishna himself says to Arjuna, Nahim tishtami vaikunte, Yogi nam hidyeshu va tatra tishtarini Narada yatra gayanti bhakta. Says to Narada, I'm not in the Vaikuntha planets, nor will you find me in the hearts of yogis. But where my devotees are chanting my glories, I'll come. I'll be there. So we should always make the effort to invoke the Lord's presence by such discussions, which help us to remember him and to fully depend upon him in all circumstances for whatever he wishes to do to keep us engaged in his eternal devotional service. That is the important teaching here from this verse. Any questions? Yeah.
Yesterday's discussion about Yamadutas were saying he has no more atonement left. I came across a word in the lecture of instruction called Vishwanti, means ran out of pious activity, the results of the pious activity. That's what is called no more atonement.
That is what? That's one of the byproducts of real atonement. Yeah, he's exhausted both pious and impious activities, both. Because he sees pious activities also. Pious activities means he has to come, has to take birth in a higher planet. So he, and not only has to take birth in a higher planet, but he has to live for a very long duration of life on a higher planet. And as long as he has to stay in that higher planet for a very long duration, that's an obstacle for... It's not only is an obstacle for going back to the service of the Lord, but also all that enjoyment there could make me forget him. And that's a big risk. I don't want to take it. Right? That's one of the risks of getting the results of pious activities. The risk is you get to opportunity to enjoy so much, you might start thinking, gee, this is good. You know? And not only that, but I can hang around here for a long time. It's a big risk. So, yeah, real atonement means to exhaust the results of the pious activities and impious activities. Yeah, that's real atonement. Mukta?
Can I talk about that? Well, he equates it that way because even if a person is motivated for liberation, at least in order to achieve it, he'll undergo austerities required to achieve it. And by undergoing austerities, if he's renouncing, engaging in austerities and renouncing his pleasures of the material world, if by good fortune, if somehow it arises, he gets to associate with a devotee, after realizing that simply renunciation of all these things is not really, it's too harsh, it's too hard, then, in other words, it's a good start. It's a good start. So to motivate one to become renounced and detached, it's a good start under certain circumstances, but it's not the goal. Right. And therefore, Prabhupada talks about that, and I think in the verse, Namam diskritina mudha prapajite naradama. What is that? No, that's, what's the next verse? I go ahead. Chaturvidha bhajamte mam janar sukhate orjana. Yes. He talks about four types of persons who approach the Lord. And he says that even those who are impersonalists, if by good fortune, by undergoing their austerities, and although they may have an impersonal conception, if by good fortune in that situation they get the opportunity to associate with a devotee, then for them, it becomes natural for them. I shouldn't say natural, but it becomes easier for them because they've already detached themselves from this world. So, and it's also explained in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 20. If you look up Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, there are some very, very nice verses where Krishna explains the different types of persons who can approach him. For those who still have desires within the heart, they can approach me through Kama Yoga. Those who are detached and frustrated with material life, for them, the best, but they still have no attraction to hearing about me, then they can approach me through Jnana Yoga. And for those who, by some good fortune, who've awakened some attraction to me, they should approach me through Bhakti Yoga. And then in the commentaries to those verses is explained how those who are situated in Jnana, who are detached, for them, although it can go either way, it could be very dangerous, they could become very much attached to impersonal conception, but because of their renunciation and because of their austerities, if by good fortune they associate with a devotee, it can very quickly act. And Prabhupada would many times even quote that verse from the first canto of the Bhagavatam, the famous Atma Rama verse. Yes. That all types of persons can become attracted to the Lord, even those who are liberated, who've renounced this world. This proves that the Lord has all attractive qualities, can attract everyone, even liberated souls. So the even liberated souls, although they may have that liberation, can become attracted to the glories of the Lord. But the devotee doesn't aspire, as we know, for liberation. The devotee knows that iha yasya hare dasya kamana manasagira nikala vapyavasta su jiva mukta su uchite, that for devotees engaged in devotional service of the Lord with his body, mind, and senses, he automatically achieves liberation without any extraneous efforts. Right, so devotee doesn't aspire for these things. Mm-hmm. Last snare of Maya, because one wants to become one with the Lord. Because one doesn't want to take the subordinate position. Therefore, it's the last snare of Maya, because in that there is no trace of service. And because there's no trace of service to the Lord, no trace whatsoever of a service attitude, therefore, one wants to become equal to the Lord. As soon as one thinks that I'm the Lord, I'm equal to the Lord, that's the last layer of Maya. There's nothing. That's it. You've gotten the last snare. Because there's no question of the living entity ever being equal to the Lord. And therefore, in that verse, Aruya Kuchchena Parampadam Tata Padanti Chodhyadam Yuzmadangreya, Lord Brahma, in his prayers, he says they perform great austerities and penances. They want to become one with you, but they'll eventually fall down from that position of imagined superiority. Because why? Because they didn't take shelter of you, and they have no desire to serve you. So it's the last snare to think oneself to be one with the Lord. That's the last snare. One will have to stay. One will have to fall again from that position. Called Vimukta Maninas. He thinks himself liberated. It's not complete liberation. So, yeah. Therefore, when a devotee hears these things, for him, it's like Lord Chaitanya is warned even to hear these statements of the Mayavadis. They say that Krishna is Maya, you know, that his body is Maya, his personality is Maya, everything ultimately is all one. And when he accepts a body, he simply accepts a body made of Maya. To what he hears these things, it's, you know, they want to completely negate that Krishna has no personality. I am. I am as good as Krishna. Well, Prabhupada says, kick him in the face with Buddha. This is your Leela. You enjoy everything. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, enjoys everything. Enjoy my boot in your face. Why are you stopping me? You're supposed to be enjoying. If this is your Leela, if you're Krishna and you're enjoying everything in your Leela, then you enjoy my boot. Of course, Prabhupada never kicked anybody in the face. And he didn't recommend us to do it either. But he was just simply trying to make the point of how false the logic is to think ourselves to be one with Krishna. Devotee knows he's one in quality, but never one in quantity. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Ara Sabhavritya. Is Krishna the supreme? All right. But no, there's another verse. Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mayadish Mayavash Ishvere Jive Bede. Krishna is always Mayadish, always the control of Maya. And the living entities are always Mayavash. They're always subject to be controlled by Maya. And that is the fundamental difference. So therefore, and Prabhupada gets so many arguments against those who want to equate themselves to be on the same level as the Lord. But that's a different class. And hopefully we don't have to go through all those arguments here. Okay. We'll end here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Blessed Srila Prabhupada.